Edge, everything bass fishing, coming to you worldwide from Megaware Keelguard Studios.
What's going on, Bass Edge Nation? Hope everyone is doing great, enjoying the freshness of fall. That's right. It's the October 15th episode, and we got some music playing.
You're listening to The Edge.
All right, it's the October 15th episode, and we are super excited to have another great show for you. Man, it's been a lot going on the last couple weeks. Again, after, you know, I talked about it in early September, we kind of had like a real slow period there, but it's been a lot of movement going on, not only with the fish, but in the fishing industry as well. It's great to have you tuning in, obviously, for this fall episode. And we're really starting to see that weather change, you know, starting to get chilly. I've been up in Pennsylvania. It's been, you know, a couple nights down in the 40s. Now I'm down here in Tennessee. That's right. We're doing Bass Edge from Tennessee this week. And I'm here for the distributor show for Pittman Creek, a big distribution for bass fishing all over the country. This distributor probably works about 1,500 retailers throughout the entire United States. It's a nice tackle show. I'm here, obviously, with the company I work with, Hayabusa Fish and Hooks, and excited to be down here in Tennessee and excited to be at the show for sure. And also, just, you know, kind of checking into this fall weather. Even here tonight, it is supposed to get down into the 40s. So weather's changing, a lot of cooling going on, and the bass are definitely on the move. A reminder, Bass Edge is always brought to you by Megaware Keel Guard. The Keel Guard providing boat owners protection from grinding salt, abrasive boat ramps, and all kinds of things that you might run up onto as you're out there in the waterways. Be sure to don't go without that Megaware Keel Guard on your vessel. Man, concluding today's show, make sure you browse on over to keelguard.com. They've got obviously a lot of other great products, the Flex Step, Scuff Buster, Skeg Guard, Battery Guard, and so much more. So check out keelguard.com. Man, since the last episode, we did finally go through that last Toyota series. They were just finishing it up as we were taping there on Lake of the Ozarks to tab those last 25 anglers that were going to be qualifying through that Plains division as well as through the wild card. Man, it was a wild finish there at that Toyota event. Travis Harriman, man, he had about a 5-pound lead going into the last day of the event, and caught one bass on the final day, but that one bass was big enough to get him the title. So I'm sure Travis was ecstatic. I was anxiously watching that. I was hoping to qualify for that Toyota Series Championship. Man, $200,000. What a great championship. I mean, I talk about it a lot here on the show over the last, 6 or 8 weeks, just because really, I mean, it is the third biggest event there is. You've got MLF Red Crest paying $300,000. You've got the Bassmaster Classic paying $300,000. And a Toyota Championship paying $200,000 to the winner, where you can get into this event by fishing, you know, just three or four events at a great cost for an entry fee, about $1,700 per event, and fish for that kind of money. But, man, I finished 29th in the wild card standings. I had two really good finishes, and I fished four events this year, and, man, just had two tough ones up north at Lake Champlain and the St. Lawrence River. But that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I was still happy to have that 15th there that we talked about last episode on the Potomac River. That was a great event. But it's going to be fun to watch and see how that shakes out. We're going to kind of dive into that a little bit today with our fall fishing, and we'll get into that. If you've been watching right now going on the Harris Chain of Lakes, the final Bassmaster EQ event is wrapping up right now as we tape the show. It looks like your Elite Series qualifiers, I've pegged about 7 or 8 anglers that seem to be shoe-ins right now, but that's JT Tompkins, John Garrett, Trey McKinney. He will be the youngest angler to ever qualify and fish on the Elite Series at 18 years old. Bradley Roy used to have that record, but now Trey McKinney at 18 years old qualifying for the Bassmaster Elite Series in 2024. Also, Robert G., Wesley Gore, Tyler Williams, Kyle Patrick. I think all eight of those anglers are virtual locks based on actually the way that's going on right now on the final day. It looks like, you know, kind of on the inside cusp, the final two anglers that'll make those nine are Kyle Austin and Ben Milliken. Ben Milliken, huge following on YouTube. It's been fun to kind of see his ups and downs throughout the year, but he's had a great last event. A little tough on this last day, but it looks like he's going to do enough. But I tell you, there's a few guys still fishing right now, and that's Bobby Lane. Bobby Lane, you know, another big fish or two in the last hour of this event, he could qualify for the Elite Series. But I see him right now on the outside cusp of qualifying, along with Logan Parks, man. I got a feel for Logan. He's been one or two guys out for the last couple years, and it looks like it might happen to him again. We'll have to see what the final standings are. But Keith Tuma, Logan Johnson, and also Brent Cannon, you know, kind of fighting for those last two spots. So it's next episode, we're definitely going to have one of these new Elite Series qualifiers on the show and kind of get their perspective of how their EQ year went and just talk to them about the feelings going into the 2024 Bassmaster Elite Series. You know, with some downtime here outside of this last open event and that Toyota final Lake of the Ozark event that really happened right there that last day of September, man, I was checking in on the National Professional Fishing League. You know, they had an event out there in Eufaula, Oklahoma, that latter part of September. A guy from California, Luis Fernandez, won the event. Man, I started looking through some of those standings. I hadn't paid a whole lot of attention. I don't know that a whole lot of anglers are paying a lot of attention to the National Professional Fishing League, but they really started giving out some money this year. You know, they have a pro entry fee, but I'm not sure the media is really in their realm of that entry fee right now, but they're paying out some big money, $100,000 to the winners. One thing I thought that was really interesting I wanted to share with y'all is Elite Series angler Patrick Walters. He's in seventh place in the Angler of the Year standings. They have one more event to go at Lake Lanier, which is coming up right here in a couple weeks. But he's won $136,000 this year in the National Professional Fishing. I looked through real quickly in Bassmaster. He's won $237,000 on the Elite Series this year. Total winnings, you know, I haven't done numbers on who won Red Crest, what else they won this year, or who won the Classic, what else they won this year. But Patrick Walters sitting on $373,000 in winnings for 2023. Absolutely amazing, and still an event to go out there at Lake Lanier and potentially a championship. This would be the first year that the NPFL actually has a championship go on. It's supposed to be down at Lake Amistad. They don't have dates for it yet, but it'll be interesting to see if the league is successful enough that they can finally pull off that championship later on this fall. But, man, I am stoked to get rolling into our feature angler spotlight here in just a bit. You know, we've got what I would consider, you know, a fall bassin expert. This is MLF professional angler Mike McClellan. You know, Mike is responsible, and we've talked about this in some past Bass Edge episodes. If you want to scroll back into some episodes, a while ago, we talked to Mike about, you know, his bait designs. He's designed some baits for Spro, specifically the McStick and also the Rock Crawler. But man, it's interesting how these baits are excellent early spring, kind of what I would consider late winter and fall baits. So we're gonna have Mike McClellan on the program right after the break, right here, talking about fall fishing and what his thoughts are on seasonal movements this time of year and how things are changing from where they were maybe 5, 6, 8 years ago to what folks are seeing right now. But real quickly, want to review. I hope everyone's enjoyed our last three episodes. Of course, we had on the Bassmaster Rookie of the Year, Joey Swintez. We had on the Bassmaster Angler of the Year, Kyle Welcher. Bassmaster Open winner from Lake of the Ozarks, Kyle Patrick. Man, I encourage you all, if you have not seen or heard those episodes, go back to our YouTube channel, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, any of your favorite media streaming platforms, you'll find those shows. So those are great shows that you don't want to miss. But as mentioned, Bass Edge in Tennessee this week at the Pittman Creek Distributor Show. And y'all stay tuned. Right after this message, we're going to be back with our feature angler spotlight, Mike McClellan, MLF professional. He's going to be bringing the goods on fall fishing. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You know the importance of protecting your investments, so choose the protection the pros pick. Grinding sand, abrasive rocks, and concrete ramps are no match for our patented technology. The MegaWare Keel Guard is made tough and made to stick. Install it yourself in less than an hour, providing the most dependable, most trusted protection for your boat, guaranteed for life. Insist on the original Keel Guard the pros have picked for 25 years. MegaWare Keel Guard. A rush of tournament adrenaline. Nitro, the choice of champion, where performance meets play. Nitro, a big water beast, a pure fishing machine. Nitro, release the champion within.
All right, welcome back to Bass Edge Radio. And we're all set. You can see him right there on the screen, ready for our feature angler spotlight, MLF professional Mike McClellan joining us on the program. Mike, thanks so much for being here with us on Bass Edge Radio, my friend.
You know, it's always good to be with you guys, Kurt. I know I've done, a half a dozen shows with you, I think, over the years. And it's been maybe a couple years since we actually got to catch up. But I guess the fact that the Toyota Series Championship is coming to Table Rock, and I'm actually looking out my window right now in my office at the lower end of the lake. I've got a phenomenal view of the lake right now. And I tell you what, it could be an interesting event come this fall.
Man, what is the draw there? I know a lot of pros living around Table Rock. You could almost take Table Rock and say it's like the Gunnersville of the Midwest. Man, there's Dave Mansue, Chad Morgenthau, Brian Snowden, Stacy King, James Watson. Geez, the list goes on. What's the draw out there to Table Rock, and what's so special about that place?
You know, I think one of the biggest things about Table Rock, when you look at the lakes here in the Ozarks, the Midwest, it's the one that has the most going on around it. You know, you've got Branson, which is a huge tourist area. I mean, there's a lot to do in this area. You know, you've got Silver Dollar City, you've got Bass Pro Shop locations, both in right. Branson and Springfield. I mean, headquarters is right there in Springfield. And it's just a beautiful lake. It's one of those lakes that is still relatively natural. And I really enjoy that aspect of it. The Corps really regulates how many docks actually will be on this lake. It is like impossible almost to get a dock permit. So I think that's one of the big things, is it's not a Lake of the Ozarks in any manner. We don't have those massive boats like Lake of the Ozarks does, and we don't have all the docks. So it's just a real natural lake and just a great fishery. And, you know, you've got not just Table Rock, but Bull Shoals within 35 minutes of my house. I can be to Grand in an hour and a half, Beaver Lake in an hour. It's just a good centralized location to fish these Ozark lakes. But then you also have the opportunity to be so centrally located if you are a tournament angler, and you can get to about anywhere you want to get to from here pretty easy.
Yeah, it's not too far a drive, that's for sure, man. And talking about getting other places easily, man, I saw you've been spending a lot of time on the water in 2023, Mike. Obviously fishing the MLF Invitationals this year. I saw you fish 4, 5, maybe 6 Toyota events. You've been dabbling in a BBT event this year. You have spent tons of time on the water. What is your take from this year's, you know, kind of involvement from bass fishing and kind of where we are today from maybe the last time you've been on the show, which is, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago?
You know, probably the biggest thing that I see is the younger generation of anglers has just improved so much over what it used to be. I mean, with the high school programs, the college programs, everything that, you know, Bass Pro Shop and Mercury and all these companies have done to support the youth movement in this sport has totally changed the, I guess you would say, the learning curve. These anglers now are experiencing what it used to take us 10, 12 years to experience while they're in high school and college. And when they hit the scene now, they're ready to get into action. And just from what you've talked about today, I mean, what's gone on with the Elite Series EQ qualifiers this year, even the new young blood that's coming into the Bass Pro Tour, it's just incredible to see. And I think there's a lot of things that really dictated that. The electronics era has changed things so much, and just the quick learning curve.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. Referring to Trey McKinney, the young 18-year-old that's qualified for the Elite Series. And you're right, on the Bass Pro Tour side, lots of young anglers coming out. Jacob Wall had a really nice year, had kind of a big splash there at Guntersville, and so many young anglers coming up now and really kind of taking a stab. And do you think, too, that, you know, it used to be a situation where the cost wasn't as you know, tough to endure as an angler. Now you see a lot of younger people feeling like they've got to take that shot right after college, or even in some cases right after high school, just because they don't have the responsibilities maybe that an older, you know, a guy that's been around a little while, you know, might have a family, you know, children, wife, those kind of things, that they're able to kind of jump out there a little bit easier from those types of responsibilities.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, you know, you're seeing so many of these. I mean, you know, Trey McKinney, I believe, didn't even fish college. I mean, 18 right. years old, basically straight out of high school. And, you know, he's making that decision to get his career started before family life. And yes. I think a lot of us, you know, when you look back to the era that you and I started in and a lot of the other anglers, you know, really, we kind of had our families going. We might have had another business, but it was always a little different getting into the professional league then than it is now. And it's, you know, you used to see guys that would actually qualify for the elites or, you know, another professional tour and maybe yeah. not take that opportunity. And I really believe that that just shows what the competition level is doing now. Guys know that if they're going to get the opportunity, they better jump on it now, because it's not an easy task to qualify for any of the upper level tours anymore.
Yeah. And now, you know, with the MLF, they probably have the best grassroots tournaments. Well, you know, with the Phoenix Bass Fishing League, Trey's won two of those things, which is pretty crazy. I mean, you're yeah. talking about now he's won them when he was like 16, 17 years old. And it's not like he just decided to fish the opens and just went ballistic. I mean, he's been going ballistic for a while. So it is pretty crazy. Mike, let's dive into, I alluded a little bit into the introduction about your, you know, making of baits, your McStick and the rock crawler, some of these things that you've been involved with. You know, it's interesting to me that both of these types of lures, shad oriented baits, really excel in the fall. And even, you know, you might say like early spring, almost late winter type. Is that because this is a time of year that you thrive in and you really enjoy it? I remember you won a couple of events on spinnerbaits back in the day. Is this something that's kind of been in your repertoire for quite a while?
It really has. And I mean, it does definitely fall into why I did design those specific baits. You know, when I first went to work for Spro, and we won't get into a lot of that detail, but it was all about hiring me to develop a cold water jerkbait. You know, back then we didn't have forward facing sonar. I mean, jerkbait fishing was totally different then than it is now. So that particular bait was designed for, you know, colder water applications. Like you said, late winter, early spring, pre-spawn. The bait does come into play a lot more now in the fall, just due to the fact that we do have right. forward-facing sonar. The development of the rock crawler was one of those things that I didn't know if I would really get the opportunity, because, you know, Spro already had John Cruz and I guess it would be Russ Lane developing yeah. crankbaits.
Yeah.
And fortunately, with my heritage here in the Ozarks, throwing the old style wiggle ward and some of the old Model A bombers and different baits that we used to throw here on these Ozark lakes. Spro finally gave me that opportunity to develop a bait that would fall into that niche. And the thing that's been so awesome about the rock crawler is we didn't try to knock a bait off. We developed a new bait that would do similar things. It achieves greater depths. And when I talk about it, I mean, I'm talking about the original 55. And it's allowed us here in the Ozarks and even across the country in other parts to catch fish deeper on that small profile bait than we were ever able to do with some of the other baits. And, you know, we've got four different rock crawlers now. We've got a DD50. We have the original 55. We have the MD55. And then we also have a RK50. So you've got four sizes, four different depth ranges. You've got shad and crawfish pattern baits that allow you to really fish any condition that you're thrown or that, you know, Mother Nature brings to you in the fall. I mean, if fish get on crawfish good, you've got that covered. But if they do get on shad strong, you've still got a bait to do that with as well.
Absolutely. Let's dive into that fall transition. You know, you could look at, there's kind of like, I don't know, maybe an old school approach with, you know, shad in the backs of pockets and you know, fish moving into docks and getting shallow. And then there's, you know, kind of this newer school approach with, you know, fishing forward facing sonar, looking at bait, looking at fish that are roaming around bait. And how does an angler today decide where to start? Is it the backs of pockets that's going to lead you maybe to a forward facing sonar style pattern? Or do you like just going right out there and looking for the shad out in the middle of the drains?
You know, the biggest thing now with forward facing sonar, it just speeds the process up.
Okay.
You know, used to, we would have to just, you know, run creeks, basically put the trolling motor down, start fishing, you know, physically looking for shad on the surface. Or, you know, occasionally you would get to a point where, you know, you'd see them on your 2D sonar. Right. But with the advancements in technology now, with forward-facing sonar, side scan, you really don't waste a lot of time just going in and fishing creeks. You go into these creeks, and typically you do start, like you just said, kind of in the middle of the creek channel, the drains, and idle into these creeks and determine, you know, what depth the shad seem to be at. And it varies so much lake to lake, year to year, when they actually finally show up. You know, you've mentioned the weather two or three times. Yeah. The weather is finally cooling off here in the Ozarks. I mean, we're looking at lows in the upper 30s and 40s. Looks nice. Like for the next couple of weeks, highs in the mid to upper 60s and low 70s. So the fall transition is really starting to happen. I mean, in the last 30 days, we've seen the water temperature drop probably 12 to 15 degrees, and it's right around that 70 degree mark. And I believe with these, you know, upper 30 degree nights and 40 degree nights, we're going to see that water temperature push down into the lower 60s, maybe the mid 60s. And things could really kick into gear just as things happen this fall here on Table Rock before the Toyota Series Championship.
Right, right. So, you know, I often talk about in the springtime, I'm going to kind of think of a spring scenario and then kind of refer it to a fall scenario. In the springtime, you know, we start feeling warm. We start taking our sweatshirts off and it starts feeling good. And we start getting up shallow pretty quick. You know, we start wanting those fish to start move shallow. We start looking for maybe some bedding activity or something. But sometimes, you know, the fish are still way behind. In the fall, do you see the same thing? You just talk about a 12 degree temp drop. There is some movement, but do a majority of the fish start moving that quickly? Or is it a scenario similar to the spring where it takes time for those fish to start adjusting to this new fall condition?
It definitely does take time. And the thing that affects a lot of these Ozark lakes, probably more so than anything, is the fact that they develop such strong thermoclines. And typically what happens is that thermocline sets up, you know, typically on Table Rock, it'll start in the spring, somewhere in that 15, 18, 20 foot zone. And as it gets hotter throughout the course of the summer, the thermocline pushes deeper and deeper. And the fish just basically follow that depth range of that thermocline. Well, in the fall, when you finally start getting some of those fall winds and you get the water temperature drops, you go through that period of time where the lake turns over, the thermocline breaks up. And that usually is when the fish really start making their first movement. You know, I think the water quality at certain depths gets to a point where fish aren't comfortable, the bait isn't comfortable. And that's what kind of starts that whole progression of the shad, you know, migrating into the creeks, up the river arms of the lake. And, you know, you mentioned it a while ago, it does take time, but it really depends on how quick the lake cools off. Okay. Once that thermocline really breaks up and the lake all stabilizes, then those fish really will make that push. But one of the biggest things that I think that I'm seeing, the more I travel and the more I fish here in the Ozarks, is the complexity and the breakdown of our lakes is changing so much. You know, Table Rock used to be full of timber. I mean, these pockets and creeks that I'm looking at from my house right here used to be full of timber. You couldn't just run in and out of them. And as the lake has aged, that timber actually has rotted any of it that's exposed to air. So we don't have much cover between like 12 or 15 feet of the old timber line to the bank anymore. There's very few places that there's that shoreline cover unless the lake is up. And I really think that's kind of changed the habits of these fish in the fall. They really relate more to the bait, the schools of bait. And it has changed things. I mean, you can still catch them on the bank, but the conditions have really got to be right, and things got to be happening to make that work.
Yeah, I can remember days where you'd go out in the fall if it really hadn't started to click yet. And for me, you know, maybe water even getting down in those 50s is really what kind of turns on a larger population of fish kind of doing that movement.
But I would definitely agree.
Right, but we try to capitalize on that early. Because otherwise, you weren't really sure where exactly the fish were, right? And so a lot of times you talked about, fishing very fast, you know, through areas to try and find fish. Is that still a pattern, maybe say like in the early morning or late afternoon, that you can capitalize on where you can throw, you know, a walking bait, a buzz bait, a whopper plopper, and still catch high quality fish in those target zones?
I definitely will say that that's what I tend to do more so in the fall. You know, when we get that first cool down, you generally get a little bit of a show up of some of those resident fish. You know, those fish that live in creeks that aren't main lake related shad fish, those fish will push shallow pretty quick, and you can capitalize before the pressure gets to them. And, you know, the baits that you just mentioned, you know, buzz baits, walking baits, you know, you've got all of these plopper style baits. Spro has a new Cyclone that's a plopper style bait. Those baits all still catch them. Spinner baits still catch them here in the fall if you get the right conditions, you know, big wind and things like that. But yeah, there is an opportunity to capitalize. I don't feel like the fish really push as hard as they used to. And I don't know if that's a pressure thing or, like I said, maybe more of a cover thing. But it seems like you see more and more happening closer to the main lake. You know, we do get like a late brim spawn here, which keeps a lot of fish shallow, like into late August, September, and even through the middle to end of September. But when that final phase of brim get done spawning, it's like all those fish just disappear from the bank for about 30 or 45 days, depending on how quick it cools down.
Right, right. I got one more question before we're going to go to a quick break. But, man, you know, looking, you know, we're always utilizing information we get from tournaments and other anglers and talking about, you know, just kind of where better quality fish are, especially for a tournament angler. Even weekend anglers, you go out and have hourly big bass event, you know, anglers, and they want to catch high quality fish too, or larger than average size. But, you know, in several events recently, it seems like that main lake deal has been more dominant. Do you feel like that's just maybe because it was still like the end of September, early October? Or do you feel like, you know, that is, and those fish were like summer just beginning into this fall transition? Or do you feel like that's more of a play where main lake fish are, on average, if you can find them, a little bit better size than the creek fish?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question, you know, because I do feel like that there are probably more quality fish that live in the main lake of really probably any body of water that we have fished. the forward-facing sonar now with, you know, what the tools that we have. I mean, with Garmin forward-facing live scope,
right,
you can go out on those main lake points and out over, you know, those drops and ledges, depending on the type of reservoir you're fishing. And you drop the trolling motor and take a look with your live scope, and all of a sudden, you know if they're there or not. I mean, occasionally they get pinned to the bottom and you can't tell, but you know when you're around them. And I still will say, though, that some of the you've got those resident largemouth that live in these bigger creeks,
right,
on these bodies of water throughout the Ozarks and even, you know, even into the South and,
yeah,
and, you know, different places that you have to keep those fish honest as well. So the main lake is just, I think there's a better population of fish all the time out there. And I think the technology we have today is just allowing us to really uncover,
gotcha,
the ways of catching those fish is probably the biggest thing.
Well, I can remember, I think the first time I ever fished Table Rock Lake, Todd Faircloth won Elite Series event there. Drop shotting, main lake points, looking at some brush, but a lot of bait on his forward face, or not his forward. On his 2D, that's correct, on his 2D sonar. But there were still, you know, you would see anglers that were really, you know, like your rock crawler type pattern in the backs of creeks, or a square billing, you know, logs in the back of creeks. Is that just tougher to exploit for better quality of fish these days in this time of year?
Well, I would say before this era of forward-facing sonar, it had gotten tougher because there were more anglers doing it. There were, you know, before we had forward-facing sonar and live scope and side view to go out and look for these fish in deeper water, it was just natural for all of us to go to the bank when that progression started happening.
Right.
I really believe in this era, with so many guys focused on what they can do with forward-facing sonar, that it's actually taken some of the pressure off the backs of the creeks and the very back ends of the river. The biggest thing I think we're faced with today is we don't have as many laydowns and logs and cover for those fish to get on.
Right.
And it's really been weird the last, you know, I've been living here on Table Rock now full time for about 5 years. And some of the things that I used to do 10 or 12 years ago haven't happened the last two or three years here on Table Rock. But I've also had those days when it seems like everybody is out on the main lake that I slip back into a creek and I catch them really good, you know, throwing a rock crawler or, you know, a buzz bait or something of that nature. So it's definitely going to be a player. And I mean, I would think that somebody in the Toyota Series Championship will have an opportunity. I'm not going to say they can catch them 3 days in a row, right, but I do believe that there will be some big bags caught, you know, really shallow, during the Toyota Series Championship here in 2 or 3 weeks.
Very, very cool. Very cool. I was tuned in a little bit today, with that last final day that's going on down at Harris Chain, watching Bobby Lane flipping, watching some guys offshore, you know, doing the shell bed deal, but also watching some guys frogging in these canals. And there were some quality fish caught every single way. And I think that's so typical of the fall that, you know, if you can just concentrate on what you really like to do, maybe that is the best way to be successful. What's your thought process on that?
I was going to say that, yes, I think to put yourself in a position to do well or win, you have got to do what you love to do to try to get the majority of your weight. I do believe that there are going to be guys here on Table Rock, and not just, you know, for the Toyota Series Championship, but I mean, anytime you look at fall fishing, you know, mixed bags on these Ozark lakes are a big thing. I mean, we've got smallmouth, spotted bass, and largemouth. I do believe the guy that wins is going to have a largemouth or two every day that make the difference. But the opportunity to catch a, you know, 3 to 5 pound smallmouth does exist in this lake. And typically, you know, you can catch that smallmouth on the bank just like you would a largemouth, or you might catch it out there in, you know, 30 to 50 foot of water, Damiki rigging or something. So I really believe mixed bags are going to be a big deal. I believe that a guy better do what he's comfortable doing. If he's a forward-facing guy, he needs to dedicate most of his time to it.
Yeah.
And as the day progresses, if he's not getting the quality, that's when you've got to take advantage of, you know, some of that old school stuff, going to the back of the creek, picking up a, you know, a tube, a jig, something to flip, possibly, you know, a spinnerbait around cedar trees. There's so many different things that could come into play on this lake. You know, I said earlier, docks aren't in, you know, the fashion here that they are in some lakes, but docks will even be a play throughout the course of the fall here on Table Rock.
Yeah. We'll talk about that after the break. Maybe we'll talk too about weather conditions, how that affects the fall bite. But first, we're gonna take a breath, have a short break. We got to give a special thanks. You mentioned them earlier. Bass Pro Shops, associate partner here at Bass Edge. Bass Pro Shops reminding you that we all live downstream. Y'all stay tuned. We're going to be back with more with Mike McClellan right after this short break. Plenty of
sunshine. Come on, man. Let's roll.
What the?
To catch the fish, you need to be one with the fish.
With PowerPole shallow water anchors, you'll get the ultimate in precision, power, and control so you can catch more fish. No face paint or phony fins necessary.
Excessive shock and vibration are two leading causes for premature battery failure. Prolong the life of your batteries with the new MegaWare Battery Guard. The Battery Guard sits under your battery and absorbs excessive vibration and bounce, reducing G-Shock by up to 80%. Great for boats or anywhere shock and vibration can damage a battery. The Battery Guard can easily be trimmed to fit virtually any custom shape or battery size. Save money by protecting your batteries. Spend more time on the water and less on maintenance. Find yours at MegaWare.com.
All right, welcome back. Here we go. More Bass Edge Radio. Excited to be here with MLF Pro Mike McClellan on this October 15 episode. Mike, you know, we like every episode, it seems like now, we talk a lot about forward-facing sonar and kind of what that means to, you know, the new generation of angling, not just angler, but I think just angling in general, yeah. You know, with bass fishing, even in the saltwater world, right. It's taken over a lot of things and really put, more cards in the angler's hands rather than, just, you know, randomly catching fish here and there. But let's talk about development of patterns with forward facing sonar. A lot of times we talk about dropping the trolling motor, main lake, backs of creeks, looking for bait. Are there specific patterns that you've been able to really kind of dial in with forward-facing sonar, specifically in this fall time of year, that you could help the listeners understand, you know, what other attributes besides dropping the sonar into the water and start panning around are there that you're looking for in order to find these locations where bass are affiliated with these shad that are roaming in the fall time frame?
Well, probably one of the biggest things is the use of our electronics as a whole. I mean, I run Garmin units, and the era that I really kind of, I guess, cut my teeth in was when we first were introduced to mapping. You know, when Navionics first hit the scene with topographical maps for our units, it all clicked for me. Growing up here in the Ozarks, I spent a lot of time studying the old school topographical maps.
How many days were you running down the lake and you're looking at a map and it's in your face?
Exactly. I've lost many of that maps and lakes.
Yeah, I remember those days too. Yeah.
But I understood it, and I understood what I was looking for. And that kind of goes into what you're talking about here, developing patterns, but it all starts with mapping. Understanding the migration of the fish. You know, you said it earlier, the shad typically will migrate up these drains into these creeks, and they migrate on the main lake up the rivers as well. But typically they make that migration, and then they make that move to flats. You know, you've got a variety of different forage in Table Rock. You've got threadfin shad, gizzard shad. We have shore minnows. We've got so many different bait fish in the lake that these fish feed on, that you've got to understand, you know, where these fish are going to go. And again, they migrate up the creek channels. It seems like they will typically go to the flats. And if you understand your mapping and the use of your side imaging, looking for brush piles, whether they be, you know, core planted brush piles. And that's one thing that the Corps does a phenomenal job here on Table Rock is regenerating the brush piles that they put in. And there are angler placed brush piles as well. So understanding all of your electronics, but the thing that forward facing sonar has done is it allows us, once we find what we're looking for on mapping and our site imaging, then all of a sudden we drop the trolling motor with forward facing sonar and you're scanning around docks or you're looking at standing timber or you're looking at bait balls. If there aren't fish there or if there's not bait there, you're wasting your time. I mean, that's the one thing that forward facing sonar has really, I guess, opened all of us as anglers' eyes. And I used to say the same thing, you know, with the use of 2D sonar. I mean, if you put the trolling motor down and you're out fishing a point and you're not seeing any activity on your 2D sonar, you're probably not around them. And the same goes for forward facing. It's just the fact that you can see so far out. I mean, we're seeing fish out 110, 120 feet. We're able to make casts precisely to these fish. And you know pretty quick if you're going to get them to bite or not. And it's just changed the whole way that we do pattern fish now. I mean, the bait, I think, is the biggest key, though. I mean, for forward-facing sonar, and I shouldn't just say bait and brush. I mean, if the fish are still relating to brush or cover or structure of some kind, the forward-facing sonar, you know, tells you if they're there. But if they're not relating to that and they are on bait, the ability to utilize your forward-facing sonar and just put the trolling motor down, you're not guessing anymore. You can actually chase a group of fish. And it's amazing how much these fish move. You know, we used to think, you know, you pull up on a point and there should be fish there all the time. And it's crazy now with forward-facing sonar, how these fish migrate on and off of that point and you catch them out over open water. That's probably the biggest thing that I've seen as far as patterns that have developed is the ability to be able to just chase fish in open water now and not really relating to anything except the bait themselves.
Right. Right. Do you think though, it's key that you know, in order to just find them rather than just dropping the troller in the middle of the lake, that you need to start with some kind of cover or geographic or topographical change, you know, whether like on the main lake it'd be a point, in the creek it'd be a drain, but maybe looking for some additional stuff. You mentioned brush. One thing you kind of threw a little nugget in there was flats. When do you start seeing those fish? Maybe if I'm on main lake looking for points, looking for brush, I go into the pockets and I'm looking in these drains for bait balls and stuff. When do you see that transition into the flats, and what kind of flats do you look for to take advantage of that, target of fish?
You know, it varies lake to lake. You know, here in the Ozarks, these lakes are all pretty complex and different. Lake of the Ozarks, for example, you know, we just had the final Toyota Series event up there, and you really couldn't say it was a fall event, but most of the fish, other than maybe Travis and a few guys that did well, a lot of the guys that I talked with, and I didn't have a great event up there, were catching fish on the flattest docks that you could find within the creek. So it goes back to what you just said, you know, looking at your mapping, determining what docks were the flattest, which docks set on the flats were where the fish wanted to be. And a lot of that, I think, has got to do with when those big gizzard shad pull up and they start feeding on, you know, all that algae growth and stuff that's up there around the bank. Those fish follow them up there and they do set up around brush, logs, stumps, whatever cover there might be to ambush them. And it's really kind of weird because you'll see those fish push, and if the bait leaves, they'll leave immediately. I mean, it's crazy. If you're not fishing areas that the bait is prevalent in, and you don't always see them on the surface, and that's the beauty of forward-facing sonar, is knowing you're fishing areas that have a lot of bait and a lot of forage around the cover and stuff you're trying to fish in the fall.
Right, right. So you've spoke a little bit about the Toyota Championship, big event that's coming up. I kind of precursed it in the intro. Man, $200,000. It's the third biggest tournament, and MLF puts on two of the biggest tournaments in bass fishing, Red Crest, Toyota Championship. $200,000. An angler is looking to go to Table Rock. You've got 25 anglers from five divisions, and I believe also a wild card. Five divisions plus a wild card. So, if they're taking Mike McClellan's cue on how to go catch some 4 pounders, you're going to need a 4 pounder every day. And maybe a couple of 4 pounders every day. How can an angler in the fall try to target a better size bass?
You know, I think that is going to be an angler utilizing his strengths, number one. I mean, if you're a guy that likes to get on the bank and go down the bank, throw in a square bill, throw in a rock crawler, throw in a plopper style bait, throw in a buzz bait, you've got to put that into your array of things to do when you show up here at Table Rock. The thing about it is, though, is any part of this lake can give up the winning stringers, or at least the biggest bags of the day. I think a guy has got to be very open-minded and not get hung up on one section of this lake. Another thing that we haven't mentioned that is going to play, bigger baits catch bigger fish in a lot of circumstances. And with Spro's new introduction of the Chad Shad, the glide bait,
yes,
that has got to be a really big deal on all these Ozark lakes in the fall.
A couple years ago, let me mention real quick, because we saw, I think maybe your buddy Jared Littner was fishing a Open Championship there a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
did really well. And I remember Carl Jochumson had a big day on a glide bait, but it seems like it's here one day and gone the next.
That goes back to the conditions, and that's right. The biggest thing guys got to understand about this lake is, man, when the wind blows the right direction and you've got things working in your favor condition wise, those baits will catch them. But when it gets flat, slick, and calm, the lake's actually, to me, got a little more color this fall than maybe it's typically had. I think the turnover really kind of made the color come back this fall. It was gin clear at one point earlier this spring, and then it colored up, and then it got dirty again. And it's weird how the lake has changed. But it's going to be fishing the conditions and fishing the right section of the lake when the conditions dictate it. The lower end of the lake has always been known for windy, cloudy days. The river arms and the creeks and things like that typically play more on those bright, sunny, type days. So a guy's got to fish his strengths. I think a glide bait is definitely a bait that a guy needs to mix into his arsenal to try to catch a bigger one. You know, the thing about this lake, it's got a lot of 2.5 to 3 pound fish in it. You can really get caught catching, 12 to 14 pounds really easy. And it's like you said, it is going to take a better quality fish usually to put you over the edge to get you into that upper teen or lower 20 pound mark. You don't typically see, a guy just come in with 5 4-pounders. It's right. Usually a big fish or two and then just some good quality fish. So there's a lot of different things that could come into play. I mean, I still say a guy that picks up a rock crawler on the right days here is going to do very well if the conditions dictate it.
What's a rock crawler day?
Honestly, I like a mostly sunny. I don't mind some passing clouds, but a mostly sunny, good, 12 to 15 mile an hour wind. I mean, this lake
ripple. Yeah.
Yeah. Even when the wind blows hard here, you can still navigate and fish.
Right.
But, I just like that good chop on the water, just enough to break the surface up. I really like more of a sunny day over really dark days. Sometimes on these dark, cloudy days, and a lot of people don't necessarily understand that about bait fish. When it gets cloudy, everybody always thinks initially, the fish are going to go to the bank. They're going to be shallow. They're going to bite today. And honestly, sometimes these cloudy, dreary days can be tougher days in the fall because the shad don't lift. The shad actually will go to the bottom. And sometimes on these cloudy days, you got to fish deeper than you would expect to fish. So you've got to really let the conditions of this lake dictate how you're going to approach each day of, not just the Toyota Series Championship, every day you get out there and fish a lake like this in the fall.
So it sounds like on a sunny, slick day, an angler, any weekend angler, whatever lake they might be on, those bait fish are really going to start to school up and get real tight, and the fish are going to get around them on those days. It might be a little bit more fickle, but the bait is going to be more tightly congregated. Is that correct?
I definitely agree with that. And it tends to lift more. And, you know, those are the days when forward-facing sonar live scope really comes into play. The guy that is versed at doing that, whether you're throwing, you know, a 3 to 5 inch swim bait, you know, the D'Amico rigging could really be a deal. Cody Huff, you know, a few years back, and Cody, I believe, made the championship.
He did. I saw him make it. He made it at Lake of the Ozarks, and he had a really good event there. And I think he finished number one in the wild card division. And I was like, Cody going to be tough to beat.
Exactly. I wanted to be fishing this deal, but when I look at the competition that is going to be here at the lake, I wouldn't have had an upper hand by any measures. But what I was getting ready to say is Cody Huff won a Toyota Series, just a standard Toyota Series. It was the last event of the year, I believe, 3 years ago here on Table Rock,
right,
and caught him extremely deep on an ice jig. You know, so there's going to be spooning going on. There are so many things that are going to come into play unless we just get that, you know, perfect storm where the water temperature does get down there, you know, below 60, and you get the right 3 or 4 condition days. It could be one on the bank exclusively, but, you know, and that would be between in my opinion, a glide bait, a crank bait, a spinner bait. Yeah. There's so many different things could come into play, but those bright slick days, you better be getting finessey with them and throwing something on lighter lines, smaller swim baits, and things like that are going to come into play.
Sounds like a very diverse, fun, challenging event that's going to be taking place there at Table Rock. You know, you've fished so many places across the country for lots of years. You know, when we talk to anglers that maybe are at Santee Cooper or Lake Murray, and of course, you know, I just plugged two places in South Carolina, but you go anywhere, Lake Lanier in Georgia, National Professional Fishing League going there here in a couple weeks. You know, what kind of similarities do you see at the Ozarks that you can take all this information and chat about fall fishing and transplant it into, you know, some of these lowland impoundments or, you know, somewhere different than, you know, the Ozark region?
I mean, the biggest thing there is bait is the key. You know, the movement of the shad and the bait is going to be key. I think the only thing that really kind of comes into play there, I wouldn't necessarily say that it always works the same on lakes that have a lot of vegetation, submergent vegetation.
Okay.
You know, when you compare these lakes in the Ozarks to lakes all across the country without grass in them, they all fish very, very typically the same. You know, you can follow your creek channels, your drains, until you find the bait migration. And you're going to find fish somewhere around them. You know, some of it may be on the main lake and some of it may be in the river arms and the creeks, but there is going to be a migration of bait. And the biggest thing that I've learned for many years fishing this lake specifically, I just always concluded that there was a huge group of resident fish that lived in a section of the lake and they always lived there. They didn't migrate very far.
Gotcha.
But after living here on Table Rock now for 5 years and getting to fish throughout the seasons, I'm starting to learn that those fall migration of the bait really dictates where the biggest migration of most of the fish in the lake end up.
Right.
So shad is the absolute key. You've got to get in an area of the lake, no matter where you're at in the country, that has a lot of shad or forage in it, or you're just not going to catch them good. And I know right now I've been in a handful of creeks just in the last 2 or 3 days that I've fished this lake.
Right.
And some creeks just seem like the Dead Sea. There's just no bait in them. There's nothing going on. And then all of a sudden you get in a creek where you start seeing bait and shad and, you know, you'll see brim and you see a lot of different things happening. And that's the thing that you've got to take into consideration, no matter where you're fishing in the country, is you've got to be around bait in the fall.
Yeah. I think the TVA lakes are somewhere that I struggle with at times, because those TVA lakes, they generally don't have lots of creeks. I mean, let's exclude Kentucky Lake by the dam. That has lots of deep pockets, right? But
yeah,
you take Pickwick, Chickamauga, Gunnersville, Wheeler Lake, a lot of those creeks, there's just very few deep drained creeks, and a lot of them are really flat, and it makes it sometimes, I guess it, you just got to look a little bit, you got to run in more of those creeks rather than try and concentrate in one or two like you could at a big highland reservoir like Table Rock.
I would definitely agree with that, you know, and the other thing that I kind of feel like comes into play is Table Rock does have a lot of those, and you know, we would call them, you know, gullies or hollows. I mean, some of them are true old running creeks, but I mean, these fish really move around a lot. And the other thing that really comes into play is transitions, you know, and Table Rock has so many different types of rock, you know, whether it be gravel, ledge, we don't have a lot of sand, we don't have a lot of clay, but those rock transitions become real keys on this particular lake and most of these lakes in the Ozark region or any lake that does have rock. I mean, I've done it on the Tennessee River in the fall where I've concentrated, you know, on those rock transition areas. And that is another big key is, you know, transition areas where the creek channels turn into the flats, they create a point, something of that nature. Transitions are always a really, really key deal that you got to pay attention to, you know, no matter what it might be.
Great point. Totally forgot about that stuff. When you're not on those kind of lakes a whole lot, and then you go, you see some of those things, but it doesn't always become a fundamental like it is for you. So
yeah,
super appreciate you sharing that. Mike, man, this has been a great interview on fall fishing. Obviously, kind of a little precursor to the Toyota Championship there on
probably
on
more Table so Rock. Than it should have been.
Well, maybe. Well, unfortunately, neither of us are fishing it, so it doesn't matter for us. So maybe we could help somebody catch a few fish, not only at Table Rock here in the next several weeks, but anywhere across the country. Mike, do you have any final thoughts for the listeners before we let you go? And I'm gonna break to a commercial and then come back and kind of give some closing thoughts of my own. But anything that you'd like to let the listeners know before we let you go?
You know, it's just one of those things. I've been at this a long time, and fall was always kind of that period of the year that I loved. And as times have changed and things have happened, it just seems like, you know, everything's changing in fishing. I mean, the ability to have the Garmin forward-facing sonar and all of the tools that we have today. I mean, all of the sponsors that have supported me. I mean, it's been an incredible ride. I still love competing in tournaments. I mean, you said it earlier in the broadcast. Yes. I fish a bunch of tournaments, and that's what keeps me going. And, you know, I do have a social media channel, so anybody out there listening that doesn't currently follow me, I'd love to gain some followers and fans. And, you know, I try to put a lot out there, do a lot of content filming, got some stuff to do here in the fall on Table Rock Bull Shoals. So just been a pleasure to be with you guys, and you guys put on a great show.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Hey, will they have live MLF live for the Table Rock Toyota event?
I do know that they will have camera boats. I don't know what days they will actually be live. I actually was contacted by Mark McBaugh, the tournament director from, I guess, a lot of the Toyota Series events this year. And he was asking me for camera boat operators in the area. I got him hooked up with some guys. So there are going to be cameras on the water following anglers. I don't know exactly what the live coverage will be. I know if you go to MajorLeagueFishing.com, check out the upcoming events, there'll definitely be a schedule of events there.
Well, it's always something I want to make sure Bass Edge people know that they can go watch these events, continue to learn not only from what we're saying and the expertise that you bring to the show, but then actually see some of that expertise out there on the water. And I'm sure several of them will be keying on some of the patterns and techniques that you mentioned today. So Mike, well, thanks so much, man. It has been great to have you on the show. Really appreciate your visit with us here at Bass Edge. We're going to be right back. Closing thoughts, talk about some upcoming events, not only the Toyota Championship, but a few other ones, but y'all stay tuned. We are going to return right after this message. Mike McClellan, thank you very much. We'll see you
again,
my friend. Thanks,
Kurt. Appreciate it, man.
Nitro, a rush of tournament adrenaline. Nitro, the choice of champions, where performance
meets play. Nitro, a big water beast, a pure pitching machine. Nitro, release the champion within.
Nobody wants to run out of power when they're on the water. There is a better way. Introducing the Charge Marine Power Management Station from PowerPole that does the work of three devices, a traditional battery charger, a charge on the run, and an emergency start system. PowerPole Charge.
Hey, 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 what's up, y'all? Welcome back. Bass Edge Radio. What an interview. Man, Mike McClellan bringing the goods. Such a great dude. Obviously a hammer out there in the Ozark country. Fished the Bass Pro Tour for several years. Won some elite events back in the day. Won some open events. And man, it was just awesome to have him as a guest here on the show. Breaking down fall fishing for anyone in the U.S. How to not only just drop the trolling motor and look for bait in the fall. Shad, so important. Backs of pockets, main lake, those types of things. But really one of the big keys I thought that Mike also, you know, out of many of the keys he brought to the episode was, you know, utilizing the mapping. Start somewhere that has some additional cover contours, whether it be points, flats. Look for brush around these areas. Obviously, look for the bait around these areas. These areas need to be alive. Make sure you're using that sonar to understand if they're alive in those areas. He talked just about being on Table Rock for the last several days. Some zones of the lake are dead. Like, he's not even sure if anything's living in that zone, it sounded like, but other zones very much so alive. And also interesting to hear that you know, it's not just, the forward-facing sonar, but also catching some key fish, utilizing some of those, traditional patterns, top waters, not just in the morning, but also in the day, how that's going to make some adjustments throughout wind, maybe using some glide baits and being able to target some better quality fish, depending on those conditions. Talked about cloudy weather, sunny weather. Go back, maybe listen to it again. A lot of tidbits Mike was able to show us about how the fish will position in the fall behavior, not only position on cover, but also position on bait, as well as with weather condition changes. So, man, that was an episode just jam filled with fall stuff. We didn't even get in a chance to talk about a whole lot of baits. He mentioned a few. Obviously, the rock crawler, something that he really leans on. Now with forward-facing sonar, you know, he'll even use the jerk bait like his McStick, but he talked about the Damiki rig a little bit. I think drop shot, always a big player this time of year. I think, too, you know, he mentioned some swim baits and notice the size of things that he mentioned. You know, some of them a little bit smaller presentation on some of the plastics. The top water, a little bigger. You know, you can make a lot of commotion, draw fish from far away. So he mentioned those types of top waters as well. But, man, every time we would change a thought process, there was some tidbit about that thought process that Mike could bring another element to the discussion. He talked, you know, just there at the end, he started talking about rock transitions. That was, from boulders to chunk rock to maybe pea gravel. These are the kinds of rock transitions that you might be looking for. And if they can have some added cover in those areas, maybe some standing timber, or obviously we're always looking for, again, the bait this time of year. So, man, a lot of great stuff there. Thanks again to Mike McClellan. Upcoming events, October 22 through 28. This is the only event that's happening this time from now till the Toyota Championship, and that's that National Professional Fishing League on Lake Lanier. Lake Lanier has got a lot of big, big spots. This should be a fun event to watch. They have live on their website. So look it up, the National Professional Fishing League. You can watch them. 3 days it's competition. Should be some giant spots caught there. Also some fall techniques and patterns that are going to be utilized there that we'd all love to take a look at and just kind of see how that is implemented out there on the water. Once again, as we mentioned, Toyota Championship. Then I believe the final event of the year is probably going to be the National Professional Fishing League, date to be announced or to be determined, but possibly down there at Lake Amistad, my hometown, in Del Rio, Texas. So we'll be looking out for that. And man, I think the classic berths are going to be locked and sealed. They've got the team championship for Bassmaster coming up. But we're going to start talking more about fall and later fall fishing as the month progresses into November. You folks up north, November's no joke. You got to get dressed up to go fishing in November. For me down south, still pretty nice. And I'm getting into a lot of these things that we're talking about now down in the southern part of the United States. We saw that over the last 2 days with the Harris chain, guys catching them multiple different ways at this Bassmaster Open. But as I mentioned earlier, we're going to get some of those EQ qualifiers on the show. New anglers fishing the Bassmaster Elite Series in 2024. They're going to be a lot of fun to talk to. But man, we're going to wrap this show up. Shout out again, Mike McClellan. Thanks for sharing the fall bass and education in this episode. Man, everybody be sure to go ahead and come back to us November 1. That's going to be our next episode. We appreciate you being with us here in this October 15 episode. We'll be studying up on some more fall fishing. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, comment what you thought about this episode below. Adios, man. It's been a great time. We'll see you next time right here on Bass Edge Radio.